हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्थमाविर्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर
श्रीवासवि
गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
page 101 Conclusion. The curse of a devotee is also to be regarded as mercy. Hetu. Because Krishna, God, is all good, a Vaishnava is also all good. Whatever he does is good for everyone. Udaharana. When one is face to face with the sun, there is no longer darkness for one's eyes. Similarly, when one is face to face with a sadhu, a devotee, who is fully determined and surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one will no longer be subject to material bondage. Upanaya. If one by chance meets a sadhu, a devotee, one's life is immediately successful, and one is freed from material bondage. It may be argued that whereas someone may receive a sadhu with great respect, someone else may not receive a sadhu with such respect. A sadhu, however, is always equal poise towards everyone because of being a pure devotee. A sadhu is always ready to deliver Krishna consciousness without discrimination. As soon as one sees a sadhu, one naturally becomes free. Nonetheless, persons who are too much offensive, who commit Vaishnava aparads, or offenses to a sadhu, will have to take some time before being rectified. This is also indicated herein. When a sadhu chastises or punishes someone, he does not do so for revenge. Maharaj Pricket had inquired why Narad Muni was subject to such a spirit of revenge, tamaha, but this was not tamaha. For Narad Muni, in full knowledge of what was for the good for the two brothers, wisely thought of how to cure them. Vaishnavas are good physicians. They know how to protect a person from material disease. Thus, they are never in tamaguna. Sagunan samatityaitam brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Vaishnavas are always situated on the transcendental platform, and therefore they cannot be subject to the mistakes or influence of the modes of material nature. From thus, means before that, that's all part of the Udaharana. Nigamana. Thus, whatever they do after full consideration is meant just to lead everyone back home, back to Godhead. So that's the whole point. Whatever the devotees do, because they understand the conditioned nature, they understand what they're dealing with. On the material platform, people don't, due to illusion. So they think that what they're dealing with, they come up with their own concepts of what they're dealing with, and that changes from day to day. So whatever standards they set, then the problem is they don't follow. Right? You know, in Gita, whatever standards the great man sets, everyone follows. But in here, whatever they set, even they don't follow. Right? So that's the difference. So then having come to that platform of working for the benefit of the living entities to please Krishna, therefore then... Yeah, everything works nicely. So you have to understand it from the point of Krishna consciousness. Is it good for Krishna consciousness or not? If it is, then that's perfect. Now, if you could do it in a better way to make it even better for Krishna consciousness, then that's better than that. But the point is, the idea is that if it is good for Krishna consciousness but is not appreciated by the mundane materialist, that therefore it shouldn't be done, that's a misunderstanding. That's actually illusion. That's attachment. Because one's thinking that there actually is the possibility to make a perfect material world, which is impossible. Right? We're still thinking that pious work gives you good results. I want good results, therefore we must do pious work. This activity didn't have the form of pious work. You know, it means mundane, that gives you pious results, therefore I don't like it. It may have had the transcendental, but it didn't have the form of piety that I want, that therefore I get the results that I want. Yes?
If the piece has nothing to do with devotional service as such.
Yes.
But just as an observation, some people, even before Krishna consciousness, they're comfortable with armies and they're comfortable with religious groups.
Yes.
And then they become devotees and they remain, you know, more or less the same. But then for some, they're uncomfortable there and they're uncomfortable among devotees. So it's not, it's just a personal problem. It's not something wrong with devotional service.
Yes. Yes, very good. Yes. It just is their conditioning. They can't relate to these things, so they can only relate to themselves. So the standard thing is one should go way out into the forest, live in a cabin, and be off the grid. Then you don't have to worry about anybody. You know, just don't send, how you say, inappropriate mail to people.
So in this sense, what will be the difference between a Kripa Siddharth and other sadhana or Dakshina Siddharth?
The difference between the varieties of Siddharths.
Because from this...
See, is how you say it. Alu Siddha, then by boiling it, then you get the starch stays in it. So you get that firmness. So if you want to make something, you need the starch like that. Well, if then you peel the potato and then you boil it, you kind of lose the starch, so it doesn't hold together. So if you want a less starchy preparation, something that doesn't need that stickiness and all that, then you do it that way. Bendy Siddha is always going to be slimy no matter how you deal with it. Just the trick is to get it, is boil it to the point where the bindi doesn't fall apart and deal with it very, very carefully. Right? Like that. That's the one Siddha I never understood.
So because here...
The point is you're getting Krishna's mercy. So we perform our sadhana. Now within that, if we get the Lord, you know, the Lord's mercy is there anyway. But if it's how that's based, does that matter? Because can you do something to make yourself a Kripa Siddhi? No. So therefore, all you do is perform the sadhana. And if your sadhana happens to be in connection with the deities, it's not you who creates your fortune either. So you're just performing sadhana. That's why in generically they just say sadhana siddha, meaning someone who was not a nitya siddha, and then through process became. So here, they maybe in the beginning didn't surrender to their spiritual master, but at the end they did, and because they did, that's why they got the Lord's mercy. Right? So it has that aspect, though they didn't go through all the sadhana that you might expect. You know, but you can't make it a sadhana. Well, I'll just go down to the river with the girls, hang out, and when Narad Muni comes. But there's one problem: you have to be at the Mandakini, you have to be on Kailash, because Narad Muni comes to see his brother Lord Shiva. So if you're not at the Mandakini on Kailash, then he might not see you. You know, if you're down at the Saturday Club in Calcutta, then he may not see you. Just the manager will, and you'll get tossed out. Right? So it's not going to be a great sadhana. So therefore, for us, we just follow the sadhana. We become inspired how someone has only followed a little bit, and they got the mercy of the Lord. Someone's followed it a lot, or someone like this. But the point is it works. So that's our inspiration.
Yes. Yeah. Generally, these things are taken a little out of context to me.
It is, but the point is what is the option? The option is sadhana. That's what everybody talks about sadhana. No one talks about, is there a process? Have you ever heard of a process described for Kripa Siddha? No, there is none. So that's the point, is we follow sadhana.
A few months ago in India and chant, you know, the relationship become very intense. And
became intense?
Yeah.
You know how I used to, people, you know, you go on the street and everyone just talks to you because you're a Westerner? Not as much now, but before? Yeah? And so then they'd always ask, oh, hey, where are you from? You know, America, this, that, this is on and on and on, really wasting time. So then one time by accident, I had come, had been in Hong Kong for, you know, like 9 months, and I had come back to Calcutta. And when I came back and they said, oh, where you're from, instead of saying America, I said, Hong Kong. They wouldn't talk to me one more word. That's it. There's a, oh. Gone. Yeah, try it. See if it still works. I don't know if it still works, but you know, if that doesn't, try Beijing, try, you know, something. You know.
China.
Yeah. 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 And so that was in the 70s. So you were saying about it's becoming, you know, it's always intense. It's just become more intense.
Yeah, more intense.
Okay.
So, it's like devotee would speak anything about India or like, you know, Indian culture, people, I think, you know, we are like...
You just got to talk about the ancient culture. Because ancient culture is just ancient. Yeah. It's common. You talk about the common principles. Right? Does that make sense? Now, if you're talking about the principles of Taoism, is that just, it only works if you're within the Middle Kingdom? Could you apply Taoism outside of the Middle Kingdom?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's why, because there's eternal principles. So when you're dealing with the Supreme, there's eternal principles. So it's just, this is how the universe is created.
You know, everybody began to criticize India, and, you know, India, anything with Indian become, you know, like evil, so... As a devotee, we feel difficult to help situate ourselves.
But I was just telling you how to deal. You have to take it back to the principle, not the detail. The secondary aspect, don't emphasize that. Emphasize the primary aspect of being conscious of the Supreme. Because that's all anything is trying to, all philosophy is trying to explain that. It's just how effective they are.
The problem is, the Supreme is like, you know, in Chinese, Chinese people's idea, from their eyes, they think what we call Supreme is like Indian God, you know. So they think we are like...
Yeah, but then explain how, why do they take it India is just India, you know? Point is Chinese medicine works all over the world, so Indian stuff works all over the world. Point is who's the problem with? Right? Means the people in Beijing are having a real problem because of Ayurveda. Ayurveda is messing the whole thing up. Right? Isn't it? No. So what is it? It's the Indian politicians. So they're for one country and another country, but their heritage and tradition, what has that got to do with it? You just have to go beyond the thing. You know, instead of backing away from it, you know, face it. You know what I'm saying? If you have a dog that's growling at you, you start to run, it chases you. You just stand there, then it doesn't quite know what to do. You understand?
You know, like, they like Mayavad philosophy. But
it doesn't matter, Mayavad philosophy. The point is you have three features of the Lord. You have Bhagavan, you have Paramatma, and you have Brahman. So Brahman is one of the features. They just have to know that Brahman's coming from somewhere. But the point is you get it and accept the Supreme. It's a universal principle. So it has nothing to do with location. You know, if thinkers in India, then it's coming, it's being propagated there, then it's from there. But the point is so much of their tradition comes from India anyway. But it's the modern politicians where they'll have problem, not with the ancient. So that's what I'm saying. You talk about the ancient, you talk about the universal, you talk about the commonality. What's the problem? Otherwise, why are they so happy to make a Silk Road? Because if everybody, you know, is not nice, then why are they making this road? You know what I'm saying? In other words, well, the stuff that was moving and all that, then was a lot of it was coming from India.
So, problems they don't like that God is an Indian name.
So, why? What do they want to call him? The point is what's Krishna mean? The all-attractive. It's not that God doesn't have a name. So they say they don't like the Indian names, but it's not a name. It's just a matter of pointing out what's there. In Chinese, there's nothing for explanation of the Supreme. There's no terms.
Yes, we call it Shanti.
And that means what?
That means God.
Shanti.
Shanti. Shanti.
Shanti.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, there's no other descriptions. Does this God have any qualities?
Very limited. Some
okay, limited. But what, like?
The Shanti is on top of heaven.
Okay, what's the Chinese word for on top of heaven? There is no word for on top of heaven. You have to say it in English. So you'll be talking along in Chinese and then go on top of heaven and then go back in Chinese like they do in Bombay, Hindi.
Okay. It's called Tian, you know. It's called Tian.
Tian. Okay, so then? Oh, Tian. Okay. So the Tian sword, right? Okay. And the dragon saber. Right. Okay, now I get it. Okay, so Tian, so that describes, so now on that the Supreme is on top of heaven, is that just a Chinese thing? So if in China you say Tian, is that a bad thing? Now, oh, that's Chinese. No, it's just the explanation. So Krishna simply means the all-attractive.
So God has no name.
God has no name, you only are describing, he has, you can describe his qualities and his pastimes and his relationships. Therefore, he has, in that way, there's unlimited names to describe that. So he doesn't have a name. But Krishna is used because everyone is attracted by the Supreme. So being the all-attractive, therefore, Krishna is the most suitable as a singular name if you want to use just one generic name.
I get idea.
You understand? So
because
like that you have
Krishna
to...
Krishna is God's name.
No, he doesn't have a name.
Okay. That's it.
Right. So, how do you say? You have the name of no name. Right? Yeah, now it works. Now it works. Okay. Now we brought it down to... How do you say? We brought it down to Tao speak. Right? So now, okay. Now it's okay.
Now it's okay.
Okay. That's the point. That's what Vedanta does. It goes beyond the mundane. So explain on there. As soon as they come up with something lower, take it to the higher. There's no complaint at the higher. You know what I'm saying? Even an atheist, you can talk about the Supreme and these things.
All
right. Just thinking that was love. I was wondering if we had that, you know, one sentence left. What? Krishna's Kumara pastimes in Vrindavan, chapters 11 to 14. Okay, 11, the childhood pastimes of Krishna. 12, the killing of the demon Agasura. 13, stealing of the boys and calves by Brahma. Oh, that's the last one. Okay. 14, Brahma's prayers to Lord Krishna. Okay. Chapter 11, the childhood pastimes of Krishna. Pratigya. To pure devotees throughout the world who could understand his activities, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, exhibited how much he can be subdued by his devotees, his servants. Right? So we see is a continuation of that same flavor in the last chapter. Which is just all these is that Krishna is subdued by the love of the devotees. Right? And by the mercy of the devotees, Krishna's therefore mercy follows theirs. Because though he is the controller of Brahma and Shiva and others, Krishna is controlled at every step by the inhabitants of Braja. The gopis would say, if you dance, my dear Krishna, then I shall give you half a sweetmeat. Not a full sweetmeat, because then you won't get him to dance anymore. So then half a sweetmeat. Then, by saying these words or by clapping their hands, all the gopis encouraged Krishna in different ways. At such times, although he was the supremely powerful God personality of Godhead, he would smile and dance according to their desire, as if he were a wooden doll in their hands. Sometimes he would sing very loudly at their bidding. In this way, Krishna came completely under the control of the gopis. Sometimes Mother Yashoda and her gopi friends would tell Krishna, bring this article or bring that article. Sometimes they would order him to bring a wooden plank, wooden shoes, or a wooden measuring pot. And Krishna, when thus ordered by the mothers, would try to bring them. Sometimes, however, if unable to raise these things, he would touch them and stand there, just to invite the pleasure of his relatives. He would strike his body with his arms to show he had sufficient strength. That Krishna performed childhood activities to increase the pleasure of his devotees was another transcendental humor. He exhibited these activities not only to the inhabitants of Brajabhumi, but also to others who were captivated by his external potency and opulence. Both the internal devotees, who were simply absorbed in love of Krishna, and the external devotees, who were captivated by his unlimited potency, were informed of Krishna's desire to be submissive to his service. In this way, he increased the pleasure of the Brajabasis by his childhood activities. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes how the inhabitants of Gokul left Gokula and went to Vrindavan, and how Krishna killed Vatsasura and Bakasura. When the Yamala Arjuna trees fell, they made a tremendous sound like that of falling thunderbolts. Being surprised, Krishna's father, Nanda, and the other elderly inhabitants of Gokul went to the spot where they saw the fallen trees and Krishna standing between them, bound to the Ulukala, the wooden mortar. They could find no cause for the trees having fallen and Krishna's being there. They thought this might be the work of some other asura who had met Krishna on this spot, and they inquired from the playmates of Krishna about how the whole incident had taken place. The children properly described how everything had happened, but the elderly persons could not believe the story. Some of them, however, thought that it might be true, since they had already seen many wonderful incidents in connection with Krishna. Anyway, Nanda Maharaj immediately released Krishna from the ropes. In this way, Krishna, at every day and every moment, displayed wonderful incidents to increase the parental affection of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, who thus felt both surprise and joy. The breaking of the Jamalarjunas was one of these wonderful pastimes. One day, a fruit vendor approached Nanda Maharaj's house, and Krishna gathered some food grains in his little palms and went to the vendor to exchange the grains for fruit. On the way, almost all the grains fell from his palms. Only one or two grains remained, but the fruit vendor, out of full affection, accepted these grains in exchange for as much fruit as Krishna could take. As soon as she did this, her basket became filled with gold and jewels. Thereafter, all the elderly gopis decided to leave Gopas, because they saw that in Gokula there was always some disturbance. They decided to go to Vrindavan, Brajadam, and the next day they all departed to Vrindavana. Both Krishna and Balaram, after finishing their childhood pastimes, began to take charge of the calves and sent them to the pasturing grounds, Gocharana. During this time, a demon named Vatsasura entered among the calves and was killed, and another asura in the shape of a big duck was also killed. The playmates of Krishna narrated all these stories to their mothers. The mothers could not believe their children, Krishna's playmates, but because of full affection, they enjoyed these narrations of Krishna's activities. Shloka Anusharanam, summary of verses. verses 1 to 6. The aftermath of the fallen Yamalarjuna trees, 7 to 20. Krishna is controlled by his devotees, 21 to 36. The community relocates to Vrindavan, 37 to 40. Krishna and Balaram begin tending the cows. 41 to 45, Sri Krishna slays Vatsasura. 46 to 53, Krishna bifurcates Bakasura's beak. 54 to 59, the young gopas recount Krishna's pastimes to the Vrajavasis. Yes.
So, when we distinguish between the Gokul and the Golok pastime, in this case, when they're relocating to Vrindavan, it's still within the Gokul pastime that are manifest here on this world?
Yes. And they have the same pastimes in the spiritual world. It's just within Vrindavan, one part's Gokul and one's Vrindavan. So Gokul's closer to Mathura. No, because you have to drive farther north. Like that. So you have to drive some ways up the highway and then turn off to the right. Well, if you go the other way and then you have where Krishna, you way the other way. You know, so Chatigar is like down the road from our place, is where they stop in between. So, you know, it's farther from Mathura. Verses 1 to 6, the aftermath of the fallen Yamalarjuna trees. Sukadeva Goswami continued, O Maharaj Parikit, when the Yamalarjuna trees fell, all the cowherd men in the neighborhood, hearing the fierce sound and fearing thunderbolts, went to the spot. There they saw the fallen Yamalarjuna trees on the ground, but they were bewildered because even though they could directly perceive that the trees had fallen, they could not trace out the cause for their having done so. Krishna was bound by a rope to the Ulukala, the mortar which he was dragging. But how could he have pulled down the trees? Who had actually done it? Where was the source for this incident? Considering all these astonishing things, the cowherd men were doubtful and bewildered. Srila Prabhupada comments. The cowherd men were very much agitated because the child Krishna, after all, had been standing between the two trees. And if by chance the trees had fallen upon him, he would have been smashed. But he was standing as he was, and still the things had happened. So who had done all this? How could these events have happened in such a wonderful way? These considerations were some of the reasons they were agitated and bewildered. They thought, however, that by chance Krishna had been saved by God, so that nothing had happened to them. To him. Right, so that's always their solution, is that, you know, because Narayana took care of Krishna, and so that's why then Krishna was always okay. When all the cowherd boys said, it is Krishna who had done this. When he was in between the two trees, the mortar fell crosswise. Krishna dragged the mortar and the two trees fell down. After that, two beautiful men came out of the trees. We have seen this with our own eyes. Sukadeva Goswami continued, because of intense parental affection, the cowherd men, headed by Nanda, could not believe that Krishna could have uprooted the trees in such a wonderful way. Therefore, they could not put their faith in the words of the boys. Some of the men, however, were in doubt. Quote, since Krishna was predicted to equal Narayan, they thought, it might be that he could have done it. End quote. When Nanda Maharaj saw his own son bound with ropes to the wooden mortar and dragging it, he smiled and released Krishna from the bonds. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Glancing constantly over all of Krishna's limbs, Nanda smiled. Your mother, whose lap you prefer to mine, has bound you up because of your small offense. So how can I release you? Srila Prabhupada adds. Nanda Maharaj is surprised that Jashoda, Krishna's mother, could have bound her beloved son in such a way. Krishna was exchanging love with her. How then could she have been so cruel as to bind him to the wooden mortar? Nanda Maharaj understood this exchange of love, and therefore he smiled and released Krishna. In other words, as Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, binds a living entity in fruit of activities, he binds Mother Jashoda and Nanda Maharaj and parental affection. This is his pastime. Srila Jiva Goswami writes in his Priti Sandarbha Anucheda 241, even when he is in distress, a devotee in Vatsalya Rasa may pretend to smile in order to reassure Lord Krishna. Right? You know, so it's the standard thing. thing of parental rasa. The parent may be having, you know, a really bad day, but in front of the child, they'll always have that, you know, that put on the best face. Right? That's just the standard. So we see it's here originally there in Nanda Baba and like that. So that's it. So the point is, because he's bound by the love of Mother Yashoda, then only with that affection can it be untied, you know, in consideration of that. So, you know, on that question of the Nalukavar and Manigriva, why didn't they untie? They didn't have the qualifications to untie, because that tying had been done due to Mother Yashoda's affection. So therefore they wouldn't have been able to untie it anyway.
I heard a pastime that even the Gopa boys, they come to untie and they couldn't, because it is done with Vatsalyas, it is much more intense.
Verses 7 to 20. Sri Krishna is controlled by his devotees. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura writes, "Who can describe the good fortune of Nanda and Yashoda, Krishna's father and mother? Though he is the controller of Brahma and Shiva and others, Krishna is controlled at every step by the inhabitants of Braja." This is described in the next 3.5 verses. The gopis would say, "If you dance, my dear Krishna, then I shall give you half a sweetmeat." By saying these words or by clapping their hands, all the gopis encouraged Krishna in different ways. At such times, although he was the supremely powerful personality of Godhead, he would smile and dance according to their desire, as if he were a wooden doll in their hands. Sometimes he would sing very loudly at their bidding. In this way, Krishna came completely under the control of the gopis. Sometimes Mother Yashoda and her gopi friends would tell Krishna, "Bring this article or bring that article." Sometimes they would order him to bring a wooden plank, wooden shoes, or wooden measuring pot, and Krishna, when thus ordered by the mothers, would try to bring them. Sometimes, however, as if unable to raise these things, he would touch them and stand there, just to invite the pleasure of his relatives. He would strike his body with his arms to show that he had sufficient strength. Right, so those are the ones describing the good fortune. To pure devotees throughout the world who could understand his activities, the Supreme Personality of Godhead exhibited how much he can be subdued by his devotees. His devotees, his servants. In this way, he increased the pleasure of the Brajabasis by his childhood pastimes. And so, this whole thing that they're doing, that someone is submissive and doing it out of something out of affection, then we see that's what's very much appreciated. It's not that it's getting something done or something's being accomplished, right? If they actually wanted that wooden spoon or whatever it is like that, wouldn't it be more efficient if they just got up and got it? You know, you get this little baby to go and get it. Maybe he can pick it up, maybe he can't, right? They don't walk that fast, right? You know, so all these things, there's good chance even he brings it, he'll bring it by dragging it on the ground. You know, so you're going to have to wash it anyway. So it's much easier. So why is it done? It's simply because of that bond of affection. So it's just excuses to interact. Because the point is, submission means that affection. So that's what's attractive. So Krishna being submissive, that's attractive to the gopis. The gopis being submissive, that's attractive to Krishna. So that's the whole thing, is that anything that's done like this, then is very much appreciated. Right? And when it's done, when there's that attention, that focus, that consciousness like this, then people appreciate that very much. Right? So you see, if you have a small child doing some things, but they're not very conscious of what's going on, okay, you know, the mother takes a picture, takes a video, and she appreciates it, maybe your friends do or not. But if the child shows that kind of being more aware of the environment, being more aware of the interactions and relationships, that thing, then that kind of video, the whole world appreciates. Okay. So, how much Krishna would be manifesting this, so how attractive will be his pastimes. Because he's doing everything we see just for the pleasure of the relatives. Right? Even he can't lift it, he'll just stand there and touch it like he is. You know, but just to increase their pleasure.
Can you say that for the pure devotees, the Ichha Shakti is pleasing Krishna, and for Krishna, on his side, the Ichha Shakti is to please his devotees?
Is the Ichha Shakti pleasing Krishna for the by the pure devotees, and by Krishna's Ichha Shakti pleasing the devotees? But the point is pleasing the devotees, is that pleasing to Krishna? So therefore, then Krishna being pleased, devotees are automatically pleased. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, we take it, Ichha Shakti is for pleasing us, so therefore I'm trying to do things here, why is it Krishna trying to please me? You understand? Yeah. So we should avoid that approach. In other words, not that these aren't the things, but that's, we wouldn't use that formula to explain this. Srila Prabhupada comments, that Krishna performed childhood pastimes to increase the pleasure of his devotees was another transcendental humor. He exhibited these activities not only to the inhabitants of Brajabhumi, but also to others who were captivated by his external potency and opulence. Both the internal devotees, who were simply absorbed in love of Krishna, and the external devotees, who were captivated by the unlimited potency, were informed of Krishna's desire to be submissive to his servants. Right? So everybody, whether we are appreciating Krishna's greatness or just the sweetness, but both appreciate, in some sense. You know, or even if they appreciate material things, that they see that these material things have come around so nice for Krishna, they're appreciating. Sukadeva Goswami continued, once a woman selling fruit was calling, "Oh, inhabitants of Brajabhumi, if you want to purchase some fruits, come here." Upon hearing this, Krishna immediately took some grains and went to barter as if he needed some fruits. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. He gave joy even to the lowest Pulinda, aborigine caste among the inhabitants of Braja. Achyuta is full in every respect, but he wanted fruit. Though he is the giver of all fruits, he quickly went out with a handful of grains, as only that was available at the moment. So he's the one who gives everybody the fruits of all their actions, right? And so then he doesn't need fruits. He's the cause of fruits. But to interact and please his devotees, then he went out and as mentioned here, it was a Pulinda lady. Right, so then they're the aboriginals who live behind Govardhan. So he's pleasing all the Brajavasis. Sukadeva Goswami continued, while Krishna was going to the fruit vendor, very hastily, most of the grains he was holding fell. Nonetheless, the fruit vendor filled Krishna's hands with fruit, and her fruit basket was immediately filled with jewels and gold. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, the fruit seller did not even get a full handful of grains. The grains fell on the path as he went outside, right? Because children, they hold things, they don't necessarily hold things so well, right? They have a concept that you hold things, but that really means they don't necessarily have. Right? Like that. When he went to exchange the few grains left in his hand for some fruit, saying, bring some fruit, the fruit seller, Pulinda woman, though supposed to sell the fruits, overcome with affection, filled his hands with pilu and other fruit. Because he was greedy for all the fruits, his small hands held them all. By the assistance of his Aishwarya Shakti, right? Because, you know, the devotee is giving. Because why is she giving these fruits? Because he had brought the right amount, and so he was greedy to get more, right? No, it's because of affection. Because, like Prabhupada said, one or two grains, will that buy you a piece of fruit? Right? No, never. But because of the affection, then she's going to fill his hands with fruit. And so as a little child, how much can they hold? But the point is, it's not that it's it's not a promotional stunt or something like that. You know, yeah, we'll give him how much he wants, and of course he can only hold three pieces of fruit. So, you know, so there's no loss there. You know, win-win, right? You know, so it's not that. It's a matter of if she, out of affection, wants to give him how much he can hold. So, according to his Aishwarya Shakti, he could hold all of that. So, what's he interested in? He's interested in the devotion. So, she just, each fruit she gives has that devotion. So, how much she has, because the medium is the fruit, so that means until all the fruits are done, she has that love to express in that way. So, he, by his opulence, he holds all the fruits. Right, so his greed is for that affection of the devotees. The fruit, he's the one who causes the fruit. So it's like, the fruit's him. So it's like, what's the big deal? The Pulinda woman received all types of wealth up to Krishna Prema by his power to bestow all fruits. Right? So she gave him fruits. He reciprocated in fruits because he gives the fruits to all activities. So, from, you know, all kinds of wealth that there is to gain from you know, endeavor up to Krishna Prema. So the most important is the Krishna Prema. Yeah. But we just see is that he takes care, right? Because being a Pulinda lady, they probably don't have that much facility like that. So they're just going, selling fruit, some simple things. They live in the forest, so it grows out there, then they collect that, they come in and sell it because it's needed, like that. Srila Prabhupada adds, Krishna is so kind that if anyone offers him a leaf, a fruit, a flower, or some water, he will immediately accept it. The only condition is that these things should be offered with bhakti. Yome bhaktya prayakshati. Otherwise, if one is puffed up with false prestige, thinking, I have so much opulence, and I am giving something to Krishna, one's offering will not be accepted by Krishna. Because if you think it's this mine, and I have so much, and I'm giving him out of my, you know, goodness of my heart, Krishna's not going to accept it. Because the person, only by following Krishna's rules, then got that result. So that the process, the result, that's all Krishna. Then if you think this is mine, and now I'm benefiting Krishna, Krishna's not going to accept it. Right? So we can see, is again, this aspect of false ego is being shown, that is completely useless in devotional service. Right? It means if you think I'm benefiting the Lord, you know, or I don't need to care about the Lord. Right? It means that's different from Hanuman. He has that pride to be able to serve Ramachandra. That it's the glory of being able to be engaged in that service, not that my service is so fabulous. Right? Because there's a distinction. Because when they were thinking they were doing big service, then Lord Ramachandra showed it was equal to the spider and the squirrel doing their service. So that's, so the point is to be able to take part, then they may feel that feeling. The fruit vendor, although a woman belonging to the poor aborigine class, dealt with Krishna with great affection, saying, Krishna, you have come to me to take some fruit in exchange for grains. All the grains have fallen, but still, you may have whatever you like. Thus, she filled Krishna's palms with whatever fruits he could carry. In exchange, Krishna filled her whole basket with jewels and gold. From this incident, one should learn that for anything offered to Krishna with love and affection, Krishna can reciprocate many millions of times over, both materially and spiritually. The basic principle involved is an exchange of love. Therefore, Krishna teaches in Bhagavad Gita 9:27. Yad karoshi yad akshnasi yad jahosi darasi yat. Yad tapasyasi kaunteya tat kurushva madarpanam. O son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering unto me. With love and affection, one should try to give something to Krishna from one's source of income. Then one's life will be successful. Krishna is full in all opulences. He does not need anything from anyone. But if one is prepared to give something to Krishna, that is for one's own benefit. The example given in this connection is that when one's real face is decorated, the reflection of one's face is automatically decorated. Similarly, if we try to serve Krishna with all our opulences, we as parts and parcels or reflections of Krishna will become happy in exchange. Krishna is always happy, for he is Atmarama, fully satisfied with his own opulence. So whatever we do for Krishna, we also get the benefit, because when you please Krishna, being part and parcel, we'll always be pleased. Right? You don't have to separately endeavor. So it's not that, oh, when I get this, I'll be happy. No, it's only if that's in connection with Krishna, will you become happy.
So. Can you say that the major thing that we do backwards because of the material consciousness is that, you mentioned that this whole topic is that nothing is being accomplished, it's an exchange. So rather, in material consciousness, it's not a bond of affection, but it's a bond of some selfishness. Where it's not submission, is previously it was when the submission is an excuse to interact. While in our case, we're trying to interact, use the interaction as an excuse to actually achieve something.
It just meant, what's the goal? Yeah. See, all religious processes aren't a goal. Right? None of them are. Only then, how you say, the Supreme Lord, that affection for the Lord, is the goal. So, therefore, any of these things, if you're using them as a goal, then you can't actually please the Lord. That's why it's mixed devotion. Right? And that's using religion. Right? So it's only when religion is used to express that devotion for Krishna, then it becomes devotion. So one is simply trying to please Krishna. Only devotion is the goal. There is no nothing else is actually a goal. It can be something that leads to goals. So you can say, oh, but it gives us a result. But that result, is that the end? No, you have to use that then in Krishna's service. So that's the point. So when it gets to Krishna, then you can say, now it's gotten to its goal. Does that make sense? So that's why then, what is it, the eighth offense for the holy name, to consider the name and karmakanda activities to be equal. Right? Because then you are taking the whole, means I do religious activities, they give me results, then I chant Hare Krishna, and it's a process also, so it gives some results. But the point is the religious process, after having been performed, it still only remains as a process. It never becomes a goal. But the holy name, though it's the process, it's also, when you come to that platform of prema, it is the goal also. So therefore, you can't compare them. Because being non-different from Krishna, Krishna being the goal, the holy name being is also therefore the goal. So you can't compare them.
What will this chanting lead to? Rupa said, more chanting.
Yes. Sukadeva Goswami continued, once after the uprooting of the Yamalarjuna trees, Rohini Devi went to call Rama and Krishna, who had both gone to the riverside and were playing with the other boys with deep attention. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, to show that Krishna and Balaram were controlled by Jashoda's affection more than even Rohini's, another pastime is presented which occurred after the breaking of the Arjuna trees. Sukadeva Goswami continued, because of being too attached to playing with the other boys, Krishna and Balaram did not return upon being called by Rohini. Therefore, Rohini sent Mother Jashoda to call them back, because Mother Jashoda was more affectionate to Krishna and Balaram. Krishna and Balaram, being attached to their play, were playing with the other boys, although it was very late. Therefore, Mother Jashoda called them back for lunch. Because of her ecstatic love and affection for Krishna and Balaram, milk flowed from her breasts. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, she began to call repeatedly, Ajo Havit. She called from far off, because she feared that if she came close, they would run away. Right, could just sing, so she's already calling. You know, because the idea is to get them to come home. They have their bath. They have their lunch. You know, that they require that. Well, if they just play, they'll get tired and hungry, and that's not good. So then she wants to be efficient in getting them to come home because it's for Krishna's benefit. Right? And we see here the aspect of affection, even though Rohini is Balaram's mother. So, okay, maybe she considered that, okay, Krishna doesn't listen, but Balaram had better be listening. But no, she accepts that the affection Mother Jashoda has is greater than her own. Right? That we don't have this envy and stuff like that. Okay? Is Rohini a Braja devotee or Dwarka? And she has to be one or the other. She cannot remain in... In fact, once we establish she's Dwarka, we're going to go through the pastimes and remove her name from everything in Braj. And if she's in Braj, then she's not leaving. She's not there. She's in both. Otherwise, how do you hear about Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka? You have to have someone there. Right? Because Nanda and Jashoda, they're staying in Vrindavan. Right? So then she's the one that can come and describe. So even in Dwarka, they like hearing about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. So she's the one that can tell all those stories. Okay? So she's in both. But you can see, as she being in both, she still doesn't have that same flavor of affection as Mother Jashoda. Right? So she's still a mother, I mean a follower of Jashoda Mayi. Mother Jashoda said, "My dear son Krishna, lotus-eyed Krishna, come here and drink the milk of my breast. My dear darling, you must be very tired because of hunger and the fatigue of playing so long. There's no need to play anymore. My dear Baladev, best of your family, please come immediately with your younger brother. Krishna, you both ate in the morning, and now you ought to eat something more. Nandamars, the king of Braja, is now waiting to eat. Oh, my dear son, Balaram, he is waiting for you. Therefore come back to please us. All the boys playing with you and Krishna should now go to their homes." Srila Prabhupada comments, "It appears that Nanda Maharaj regularly took his food with his two sons, Krishna and Balaram. Jashoda told the other boys, 'Now you should go to your homes.' Father and son generally sit together, so Mother Jashoda requested Krishna and Balaram to return, and she advised the other boys to go home so that their parents would not have to wait for them." Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, "As soon as Krishna and Balaram heard that Nanda Maharaj was waiting for them and could not take his food in their absence, they started to return." Right? Because just on their own, they'll keep playing in that, because kids don't, as long as they're absorbed in playing, they don't notice anything. They don't notice they're tired, they're hungry, they're this, they're that. They just go on playing. You know, like that. So until they just fall asleep or something. But here, once they hear that Nanda Baba can't take his meal, then they'll come. Their playmates complain, "Krishna's leaving us just at the point when our playing is at the summit. Next time we shall not allow him to leave." His playmates then threaten not to allow him to play with them again. Krishna became afraid, and instead of going back home, he went back again to play with the boys. At that time, Mother Jashoda scolded the children and told Krishna, "My dear Krishna, do you think that you are a street boy? You have no home. Please come back to your home." Mother Jashoda further... notice here, she's still... Even though she's firm, she's still polite. Okay. Mother Jashoda further told Krishna, "My dear son, because of playing all day, your body has become covered with dust and sand. Therefore, come back, take your bath, and cleanse yourself. Today the moon is conjoined with the auspicious star of your birth. Therefore, be pure and give cows and charity to the brahmanas." Srila Prabhupada comments, "It is a custom of Vedic culture that whenever there is an auspicious ceremony, one should give valuable cows and charity to the brahmanas. Therefore, Mother Jashoda requested Krishna, 'Instead of being enthusiastic and playing, now please come and be enthusiastic in charity.'" Yajna dana tapa karma na tyajam karyam eva tat. As advised in Bhagavad Gita 18.5, sacrifice, charity, and austerity should never be given up. Yajyo dhanam tapaschaiva pavanani manishinam. Even if one is very much advanced in spiritual life, one should not give up these three duties. And so, this idea, we chant, we don't care for the rules. We can use that, maybe certain rules, but what, still these ones, as Krishna recommends, then those are continued. Yes? Mm-hmm. To observe one's birthday ceremony, one should do something in terms of one of these three items: yajna, dana, or tapa, or all of them together. Okay. Sacrifice, charity, or austerity. So these kind of things one should increase, you know, do something more devotional, some aspect of increase the service, increase the charity. So quite the opposite of the modern day concept of a birthday, when you do absolutely nothing and everyone's supposed to give everything to you. Right. Slightly different.
Nowadays they also give return gifts, so they're giving some kind of a dana. Yes.
They're giving return gifts.
The birthday boy, the birthday gifts are returned to all the kids. So
a dana. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Oh, they do, and that's nice.
Otherwise nobody would come.
Huh? Otherwise no one would come. Oh. I was wondering, how is this coming up now? Okay, now it's been revealed. Okay. So maybe it doesn't have quite as much... you know, I mean, from the kids' point of view, it'll be, but from the parents' point of view, they know it's you buying your friends to come.
Okay.
Yeah.
If he should be doing, or
it says one of these three, or all of them together. It means one of the whatever works. You know. Mother Jashoda continued. Just see how all your playmates of your own age have been cleansed and decorated with beautiful ornaments by their mothers. You should come here, and after you have taken your bath, eaten your lunch, and been decorated with ornaments, you may play with your friends again. Srila Prabhupada comments. Generally, young boys are competitive. If one friend has done something, another friend also wants to do something. Therefore, Mother Jashoda pointed out how Krishna's playmates were decorated, so that Krishna might be induced to decorate himself like them. It's just a natural thing. Oh, he's doing that, so then they have to do that. It's just the way, you know, one's playing with the toy, and they're watching and they're seeing, they're happy, then the other one, he has to play with that toy. Right? You know, it's just the way it works. They have to, that competitive mood is there. So she uses that for getting the work done. Does that make sense? Sukadeva Goswami continued, my dear Maharaj Parikit, right, so these things are there, but you're engaging in Krishna's service, so then one's purified. Right here, they're pleasing Krishna, so therefore it's not a problem. Because otherwise, sometimes they may be said, oh, no, but you shouldn't use these things, then they'll develop the wrong attitude and this and that. You know, but the point is no, this is the mentality. So if that mentality is engaged in Krishna's service, it gets purified. That's how it'll go away. But if you just ignore it, it'll just come up later. That's all. Sukadeva Goswami continued, my dear Maharaj Parikit, because of intense love and affection, Mother Jashoda, Krishna's mother, considering Krishna, who was at the peak of all opulences, to be her own son. Thus she took Krishna by the hand, along with Balaram, and brought them home, where she performed her duties by fully bathing them, dressing them, and feeding them. Srila Prabhupada comments, Krishna is always neat, clean, and opulent. It does not need to be washed, bathed, or dressed. Yet Mother Jashoda, because of affection, considered him her ordinary child and did her duties to keep her son brilliant. So even though he doesn't need, he's the origin of all this. So so out of affection she's doing it. Because Krishna's there playing, saying, oh, you need to be, you know, bathed, dressed, ornamented. Right? All his friends have been playing. So they're in the same state as Krishna. But she's pointing out how nicely they're dressed and everything like that, which they are, not that Krishna still is. But you don't want to be like that? You know, of course. So then bring them home. So that's the thing, is it doesn't actually need it, but it's just out of affection.
This was the first birthday, Krishna. First
birthday. That, I'm not sure, because I kind of think it wasn't Trinavarta was already after a year. Yeah, so this must be later than that. Because then after this, then when they move to Vrindavan, then they'll get the calves. So it'll be somewhere between the first and the fifth.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're playing little again from home, very early after some time.
Yeah, so it'd be something in there. Yeah, something in between. Because you're just hitting the main things, because on a daily basis, wonderful things will be going on, just these extraordinary ones, then those will be described. Yes. Otherwise, every day you could describe and it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. So just the extraordinary things are being described. Because he could go on forever, but he's only got 7 days. Right? Yes.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada.